This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Xiaoning here with Kusu Chuang, and this is The Morning Run. Now, in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking about how COVID-19 is impacting the wallets of the Malaysian middle class. But before that, markets. Because it wasn't such a good day in US, the Dow was actually down 1.3%. The S&P 500 was down 1.2%, while the Nasdaq was down 2.3%.
Yeah, and before that, Asian markets also were quite mixed, though. The Japan was down by 0.6%. In China, the Shanghai Comp was down by 0.2%. But Hong Kong, Singapore and KLCI rose by between 0.7% and 1.2%.
So we have on the line this morning Carlos Casanova, Chief Asia Economist with COFAS, based in Hong Kong, to talk about what's moving markets. Good morning, Carlos. I think the first thing we want to talk about is the US job data, because that disappointed last night and there was an unexpected rise in jobless claims. So what do you make of this number, and does this mean that a spending bill will push through as unemployment benefits end in July?
Good morning. So we've seen quite a large amount of disappointing data coming out of the US, and it's understandable in the context of everything that's going down with more and more cases in some of the states in the United States. So, and it's not entirely surprising that the number of jobless claims increased. It's just to be expected, to be honest. So I don't know why everyone was so surprised by that figure. So of course, yes, that means that once the existing package expires in July, they will have to do more to sustain employment going forwards. And especially in the context of this being an election year in November, I think that the authorities will try to do their best to make sure that they can at least cushion that downside pressure as much as possible before the election in November.
Yeah, Carlos, what is your sense of whether or not the stimulus bill will be passed? Because there's been a bit of a to and fro among the two parties in Congress, but also just also in terms of the term, the kind of stimulus measures that will be introduced.
There's going to still be a lot of debate about the kind of stimulus measures that could be introduced. However, in the context of all of the downside pressure on the economy, I think it is imperative, and there will ultimately be bipartisan support for some form of fiscal package that focuses more on the of a stimulus package that focuses more on the fiscal side of things, with monetary policy on the back burner for now, as you know, the Fed has already done a lot, and that has already translated into a lot of disruption in the markets as well at a global level.
And talking about the Fed, because they keep on printing money, we have seen weakness in the US dollar, and of course that has resulted in the Chinese yuan appreciating. But if we look at it from the PBOC point of view, do you think they want to maintain the yuan strength? What kind of range do you see it trading against the greenback?
Yes, so a lot of this pressure is in addition to that higher number of COVID-19 cases in the U.S., especially in some states. You also have, you know, this widening current account deficit, and the sort of debate around the budget also feeds into this. But you do have a widening current account deficit in the United States compared to a current account surplus for the Eurozone country. So all of that is going to fuel capital portfolio flows out of U.S. dollar and into other safe haven assets. Such as gold, such as the euro, such as the Swiss franc. And of course, there is less depreciatory pressure on emerging market currencies, including currencies in Asia Pacific, including the yuan. So we saw the Chinese yuan actually pierce or appreciate back through that psychological level of 7. This is, however, not likely to be the government's strategy or preferred approach. They don't want to have too much appreciation so that their exports become less competitive, you know, relative to other exporting countries in Asia. But they also don't want to see so much depreciation that they risk capital outflows. So we had initially, you know, at the beginning of the year when the situation in the US wasn't as bad, forecasted a range of 7.3 for the year end. However, we have revised that forecast down to 7.1%. And currently it's around 7. They are going to feel comfortable with that interest rate, with that exchange rate remaining around 7. But ultimately, they are looking for it to be slightly weaker so that the exports can remain competitive, but without risking any sizable portfolio outflows. So 7.1 would be my guess for the end of the year.
Yeah, staying on the China narrative here, Carlos, Q2 GDP for China came in at a better than expected 3.2%. What does that mean in terms of the health of the Chinese economy and also in terms of also Q3 and Q4 and the fact that China seems to have recovered from the pandemic earlier than expected?
For us, it was not a surprise. So my activity tracker for China was pointing to upside in Q2, and most of that upside was on the back of manufacturing activity and also some indicators related to the services industry. However, if you look at the underlying data, consumption remained subdued. In fact, retail sales was negative for the whole quarter. So that means that rebooting the consumption of actual real goods in the Chinese economy remains a challenge for the Communist Party going forwards. We haven't revised the year-end forecast, so we still expect a 1%. The reason for that is that we were initially envisioning a stronger rebound in the second half. Now we have a good performance in Q2, but we expect that with the number of COVID-19 cases increasing worldwide and also in some places in China, that rebound in the second half will be weaker than expected. So, you know, one thing will offset the other, and we are still going to end up the year with around 1%.
And Carlos, looking at another North Asian economy, South Korea, I mean, they are in a technical recession caused by contractions both in exports and private consumption. Now, their benchmark rate is already 0.5%. So what other options can they, you know, does the government have or the central bank has to boost demand?
Well, there's not much that Korea can do because they can't change its economic model overnight. And you're right. Most of that downside in Q2 was on the back of consumption, but also external demand. And exports account for 40%. Of South Korea's GDP. So, you know, in a sense, their hands are a bit tied in this global pandemic context. Now, doing more on the monetary policy front is unlikely, not only because the benchmark interest rate is quite low, but also because the central bank, Bank of Korea, is going to be very concerned about launching, you know, the only thing they could do is launch quantitative easing, but they are already very concerned about asset price inflation in Korea, especially housing prices, and rising inequality levels. Remember, this is a left-wing government in South Korea. So it's unlikely that they will opt to go down the monetary stimulus path, and they will have to focus on doing more fiscal spending and reducing taxes for companies and individuals in order to try to get consumption to restart and have at least that be an upside factor for the economy. But overall, we are looking at negative growth this year. However, South Korea was able to control the number of COVID-19 cases very rapidly compared to other parts of the world. So the downside is lesser than in other places where we are still seeing the number of cases creep up.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, Chief Asia Economist with COFAS based in Hong Kong. Not such good news coming out of Korea. Like you say, you know, if you're in a country that 40% of your economy is exports, you're not going to be able to change your business model overnight. You're definitely driven by, you know, technology, which of course is having a good time in terms of share price. But is there real consumption? Is there real recovery in that sector?
Yeah, good point. I mean, Apple dropped, 4.5% overnight? There's concern that iPhone sales were not as good as expected or not as good as historical measures. And obviously Samsung is one of the biggest, and obviously South Korea is one of the biggest suppliers to that supply chain. There's a very funky function on Bloomberg called ECFC, which forecasts, polls, consensus estimates of economists on countries' GDP. And Korea is expected to drop to another 6-odd% contraction in the third quarter. So that makes it 3 straight quarters of drop. But that's not as bad as Australia, because Australia, which hasn't reported Q2 GDP yet, is expected for the next 4 quarters to be in contraction. And this is a country which hasn't had a recession for like
20 years.
Since the Jurassic era.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
They've had the longest run ever. Yeah. Meanwhile, we look at some of the corporate results that came out last night out of US. I think the one we need to really look at is Intel, because they reported earnings a few hours ago. Now, actually, when you look at the earnings, it's not bad. I mean, second quarter revenue was only $19.7 billion, which is up 20% on year. Data-centric revenue grew 34% to $10.1 billion. PC-centric revenue grew 7% on year to $9.5 billion. But when I listen to commentators, I think the disappointment comes from the fact that their next generation of semiconductor technology will actually be delayed. So this is the point where the world's largest chip maker, and they are, could fall behind in terms of their rivals. So they were supposed to do a 7-nanometer chip, and that was supposed to happen at the end of 2022 or early 2023 now. And this is actually 1 year behind their schedule. And the fact is that their rival, AMD, is already doing this now. So, you know, it's all about competition and keeping up with competition, right?
Yeah, plus the fact that Apple products are also moving to their own microchips. I think, yeah, it's usually 12 months behind internal targets. The other thing which also scuppered Intel's share price after hours was the fact that their gross margins dropped from about 66% to 62% to 55%. So that's not good as well.
Now, another tech company that we should talk about is Twitter, because they reported a second straight quarter of record user growth. Basically, people joined the service for news and entertainment during the global coronavirus outbreak. But its advertising business was impacted amid global marketing retractions as business pulled back on spending. So they did see a jump, a 34% jump in main daily users. But maybe, you know, at the same time, that wasn't reflected in terms of sales, which declined 19% on year to 683 million. So up next, we'll be speaking to Darren Tay, country risk analyst at Fitch Solutions. Now stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.